It's time for the Cheap and Chad's Power Half Hour.
All right, welcome back to yet another Chief and Chad's Power Half Hour. This is like 3 weeks in a row, Chief.
I know. Let's see if we can keep this up during the season here, or if it will fall by the wayside like my weekly observations will, inevitably.
Yeah, well, you know, I think it's one of those things where as long as we have topics to talk about, as you know, as long as we can find the half hour or however long it is, I mean, we're recording this at, you know, 12 a.m., at least my time. You know, as long as we can find some time to carve it out and do it, we do it. You know, we put it out because it's a labor of love.
It is. And it makes me actually organize some thoughts when it comes to fantasy. So I like this so far. So we got cool. A couple of topics on the agenda for today.
We do, yeah. So the first thing I wanted to bring up, and this is going to be not necessarily a topic to discuss, but this is there's a Reddit user that created a Twitter feed called 32 Beat Writers. And what's great about it, and if you can't figure it out by the name, is that it basically retweets the 32 beat writers from every NFL team. So if you are like me and you love preseason like camp stuff, but you just don't have the time to research it, you know, just following this Twitter feed is really great because it's basically just a quick, you know, bylines, short, quick hits from every beat writer. So you can kind of just keep a tab on what's going on. And maybe, you know, some people are getting reps, some people get hurt, whatever it is. But that's a nice, cool, little, neat Twitter handle to follow if you're interested in that stuff.
I did. I looked that up yesterday. It looks pretty legit. So, you know, recommend the follow. I haven't really looked at it too much yet, but it seems legit.
Cool. All right. So I'm going to throw a curveball at you. This is going to be I want a quick topic of discussion, like 2 minutes. But I was thinking about this on the plane, and I really want to talk about it. Given the recent events that just happened. So when Kat and I did our Chatting with Chad's episode a few weeks ago, one of the questions that was submitted to us was, if you could take over the Browns, you know, office, what would you do to change that team and turn it into a Super Bowl team? And at the time, you know, I made some comments about doing the O-line, doing the D-line, whatever it is. I am now convinced that I probably could do a better job than the Browns' current front office is doing. You know, and here's my diatribe, and then I want you to give me your feedback. But basically, here's how I feel. Over the past 10, 15, whatever years, the Browns, for the most part, have been a one step forward, two steps back kind of program. They nail on some hits like Joe Thomas, and they miss on other ones like Brady Quinn, Johnny Manziel, basically every quarterback they've taken. My opinion was starting to change over the past 2 years, seeing some of the moves that they've made, not only in the draft in terms of their draft capital they were acquiring, you know, trading back, acquiring high picks, the things that turned out to be high picks, you know, the move to absorb Brock Osweiler from the Texans, which ended up being like the number 4 overall pick. You know, those are savvy moves that they've made. And I was impressed, and I figured, you know, with enough time, they keep moving forward. You know, maybe Hugh Jackson won't end up being the guy, but at least they seem to be on the right track.
Right.
Over the past, few weeks, and really just from the draft, basically from the 2018 draft forward, I have been baffled by some of the decisions they've made. I completely get why they chose Baker Mayfield at number 1. You got to take your shot. You got to pick your guy. I get that. I don't understand the pick at number 4 and the cornerback that they took. That's not necessarily a huge area of need for them, I felt, given their other glaring holes, given that guys like Joe Thomas just retired. And, you know, now you only end up taking one small school offensive tackle in like the 4th round to kind of shore up your offensive line. I don't understand their choice to host Hard Knocks when you've got guys like Josh Gordon, who obviously it's not going to be good for them pressure-wise to be on camera. And if you ask me, that's the exact reason why he's not with the team now, and he's spending time away from the team because he doesn't want to be on Hard Knocks. He doesn't want to be center of attention. You choose guys in the draft like Antonio Callaway, who didn't even play last season in college because they had issues. They had issues with marijuana, and then oh yeah, by the way, he had a diluted drug test that he took at the combine. And then he just gets cited on Sunday for marijuana. And then also supposedly he had like bullets and gun parts in his car. And then you choose to on Monday trade Corey Coleman, who was your first round pick 2 years ago, number 15, I believe, or what, somewhere in there, to the Buffalo Bills for a seventh round pick, and not even a 2019 pick, but a 2020 pick, a seventh round pick 2 years from now. I don't know if there have been any trades such as that that were such a massive disparate value, and that they were willing to say, oh yeah, Antonio Callaway is the guy, Andrew Higgins is the guy, Josh Gordon is the guy. I get that you picked up Jarvis Landry; he's obviously the bread and butter there. But why would you make that decision and make such a bad decision? I don't understand.
Well, it's the Browns, so there really is no explanation other than this is the Browns and this is what they do. With the Coleman thing, I think if you put two and two together based on what I saw from Hard Knocks the other night, you have the Jarvis Landry speech about mm-hmm. the receivers being soft.
Great speech.
Apparently that came after a couple clips of Corey Coleman making some bad plays in practice and the coaches referring to him as soft. I think you see why they traded Corey Coleman, because it's probably more than anything to send a message to anybody. That trade is probably a message center to the whole team that, hey, if you're going to be soft, if you're going to show up and not work, we're going to trade your ass and we don't care what we get in return for it. I think that's what they're trying to accomplish there. Not that I agree with it or that it was the smart move, but that seems to be what that was.
Okay. All right. That's fair. I actually was just looking back at my notes here. The other personnel thing that I took umbrage with was the fact that they signed a guy like Carlos Hyde. You already have Duke Johnson, who caught, I think, the most catches from a running back, or second most catches, like 70 plus receptions as a running back. You signed Carlos Hyde to be your main running back after letting go of Crowell. And then they go out and draft Nick Chubb, and just adding more confusion to that. And typically those types of running backs are running backs that prosper when you give them touches, not divide them and make them a committee. So again, that added to that whole, which is, I don't understand their personnel decisions, but at least as far as Coleman's concerned, I get your point.
Yeah. I don't think it's the Browns, and I don't think it's supposed to make sense.
Okay. Fair enough. All right. So let's move on to topic two, which is this is a segment we're going to call players that you like / love, but that you don't plan on drafting this year. And obviously, you know, for the right price, anybody is draftable, right, in terms of value. But for the most part, let's talk about one or two guys that we're not planning on taking. Even though you like the guy, you just, because of circumstance, because of where they are, whatever, we're not taking them. And I'll lead us off. I told you that I was thinking about talking about Cole Beasley, and he's definitely an honorable mention because, you know, over the past couple of years, he'd been trending up in terms of his trend line, except for last year when just everything tanked. So, you know, no longer do I feel that he can even be a remotely startable wide receiver three. I think his overall consistency is as far as scoring the top 36 of wide receivers on a week-to-week basis is like 10%. So it's just not worth it. But the two guys I do want to talk about are, number one, Ronald Jones. I don't understand the choices that the Bucks made in that draft pick. I get that you needed a running back, but I felt like you needed other help. He's a guy that, you know, from USC, he as his rushing attempts increased, as his touches increased, his overall stats decreased in terms of his yards per catch, yards per carry, all of that. And I know that typically that's what happens, but just he was a guy that I felt, you know, and maybe it's just a bias after watching the Notre Dame game, but I did see a couple others. He just seemed like he was – a soft guy would go down after the first hit.
I didn't watch enough of USC football to know that. I know, you know, there's some analysts that are fairly high on him. I know there's some that, you know, want to avoid the Tampa Bay situation. It seems to be a bit of a crowded situation. And I think it's one where this is not like Doug Martin coming into Tampa Bay a few years ago when it seemed like he was going to be the clear-cut guy from the get-go. The infamous "who the fuck is Doug Martin" quote from Mike. you know, you still have Peyton Barber there. It's a little bit of a muddy situation. But you know, hey, if you guess and you guess right, you know, Ronald Jones could be a value in the draft potentially, but it's all, you know, how lucky do you feel?
Gotcha. Fair enough. And, you know, actually, now I'm thinking about it, I think I misspoke earlier when I said that the Browns didn't draft a tackle. I was thinking actually the Buccaneers. I mixed my 2 points together. It was actually the Bucs that only drafted like a small school tackle in like the fourth round. Because actually, I'm looking at the draft list. The Browns actually drafted Austin Corbett as a tackle in the second round. So
I don't think anybody's going to hold it against you. It's okay. Yes. Yeah. We forgive you.
Thank you. And then let me give you my second guy, and then you can go. And my second guy is actually, I'm going to pull what you did last time, which is multiple guys, which is basically any Jacksonville wide receiver. Specifically, I'm talking about guys like Keelan Cole and D.D. Westbrook. But really, I just – with the amount of mouths you have to feed there, I just – these are guys that I like, but I just don't – I can't see any of them making an impact without some sort of massive blowout game or somebody basically getting injured and having a hole to fill. I mean, you've got D.D. Westbrook. You've got Keelan Cole. You've got Marquise Lee, who, like, statistically was, like, one of the worst wide receivers in the world last year. I don't understand why they let Allen Hurns go, given the fact that Marquise Lee was so bad. You already let go of Allen Robinson, and now to let go of Hurns, didn't make sense. Who did they sign from the Colts? Who am I thinking of?
Dorsett,
thank you. Mm-hmm. You know, they've got so many mouths to feed. That's generally not an offense that's an air-based attack now that they have Fournette. They've played a lot of catch-up games. Boyle's been good when they've been coming from behind, but I can't see anybody making a truly lasting impact other than some guys having like boom bust weeks, which really only helps you in like a best ball type format.
I don't know if I'm as down on the Jacksonville
Dante Moncrief passing that's game.
Oh, Moncrief, yeah, my bad.
Yeah, yeah.
Dorsett was on the Patriots last year. Yep. Got those guys mixed up. For some reason, they always seem to. I guess you never quite knew, especially late in the year, which one was going to show up. You know, there were some Keelan Cole games. There were some Westbrook games there. So maybe it's kind of a whack-a-mole kind of situation where, you know, you never quite might know week to week which receiver is gonna pop up. And, you know, God forbid they're in a defensive slugfest where it's like 10-7 or 13-7 and they're just trying to, you know, milk the clock and play defense, run the ball, and you know you're not going to get much there. So I don't know what to think of it either. But the big thing is Blake Bortles is throwing to those guys, and I don't trust him as far as I can throw him, which is farther than Blake Bortles could probably throw himself. So I don't know.
Fair.
But so my guys, one is we just kind of briefly touched on him. I don't think I'm going to be leaving the draft this year with Jarvis Landry. Hmm. And not that I've left drafts before here with him. I've never had him in our league. I've tried to target him in our league before, and he's always gone, I think specifically to Jake, for more than I had anticipated paying for him. I owned him in a PPR league, and he was secretly secretly like my Scott Hatterberg. Moneyball Scott Hatterberg from 2014, my 2014 PPR league, leading me to a title. And then 2015, I got him back, and same thing, ended up winning a title with him. I generally don't trust receivers moving situations like this.
Yep. I would agree.
Giving a peek behind the curtain of my draft strategy. You could ask Kat. That's one of the reasons why I didn't take Terrell Pryor from her in that trade last year. Why I didn't try to draft Terrell Pryor last year or anything. I just don't trust receivers moving situations and moving quarterbacks. And so I don't really trust Landry all that much. Another guy for me, he's a player near and dear to my heart, Frank Gore. And I don't even know if anybody's going to be leaving the draft with Frank Gore on their team. Probably not.
I feel like you say that every year, but the guy is consistently like a running back. Well, this is the only time
where somebody's ahead of him on the pecking order. Kenyon Drake is.
Well, technically, you know, they're listed as co-starters.
Well, let's see what happens here. But I, you know, at some point, the age just has to catch up with him. And, you know, I think he'll spend his last year or two in the league the way Jerome Bettis was for the Steelers, where he might be turned into like a, you know, a goal linebacker or something like that, short yardage mm-hmm. guy, is on the team because he provides a lot of veteran leadership, and, you know, he can teach a lot to younger players on the team with his work ethic. And, you know, everybody swears up and down about his work ethic and his character. So, you know, that's why he'll probably hang on probably, you know, longer than he should at the end of his career. But, you know, I just love him dating back to his days in San Francisco. It was so much fun watching him play. I got to interview him for a story in 2014 when I was on the Notre Dame beat, which was really cool. I kind of used an opportunity to write an Amir Carlisle feature as a way to interview Frank Gore, because Amir Carlisle used to work out with Frank Gore.
I see.
Amir Carlisle's dad used to work for the 49ers, so that was the connection there. So that was pretty cool to get to talk to him for 15 minutes on the phone one day. And, but yeah, I don't think I'll be, drafting him anywhere, but absolutely love him.
Fair enough. Yeah. I mean, old man Gore, man. I mean, he can take you places, but yeah, I think you're right. I think this is his last season. Mm-hmm. All right. So now let's move on to the main event. And this is going to be mostly you talking with me reacting. But this is the unveiling of the divisional matchups that you have decided as league winner.
Yes. So I did a couple things with this, and I went back and forth trying to decide how the hell am I going to do this. You know, obviously I have a bit of an advantage here. I can give myself, you know, potentially who I think is the weakest set of pairings or the weakest pairing of the bunch. I could give myself, you know, people who don't start fast if I want to try to win, you know, ensure a win in the Rumble or the Johnny mm-hmm. Jamboree of week one. Mm-hmm. But I also wanted to look at a little bit of league history. I didn't want to repeat, you know, I didn't want to repeat any division matchups here. And of course, you know, splitting up Joe and Tim. Splitting up Joe and Tim helps with that a little bit, and Johnny and Wine Coop coming together, you know, makes that a little easier because we're going to have different pairings regardless here. So, and I did use a little bit of competitive advantage. I think when you see that I with the group I put in Joe and my division, you'll see that they've combined for the least amount of playoff appearances of any pairing in the history of the auction league. So there was a little competitive advantage there on that.
Can I guess who it's going to be?
Sure. Why not?
I'm going to guess Jake and Ryan.
No.
Cat and Mike.
No.
Goop and Johnny?
Nope.
So Joe and Tim.
Joe and Tim, yes. Okay. I went with Joe and Tim. Yeah, I kind of a little bit extends back to, I believe, 2013, the last time Tim was a solo owner. Tim knocked me out of the playoffs that year, and I think that was his last hurrah as a solo owner, because 2014 was when he and Joe teamed up and they went to the finals that year. And I'm pretty sure they've been together ever since. So, right. You know, a little bit is, you know, let's get Tim back for 2013. Now that he's a solo owner again, you know, let's just see how good they are. So a little bit of gamesmanship there in that pick. So that's right, division like one. All right. Division two. I'm going to start off with Mike and Kat is in one division. And in the other division is you and Gelch. So you guys are in division three, Mike and Kat in division two. Do you want to try to guess who you're paired with?
I'm going to guess that we are paired with Johnny and Gates.
You are not. You are paired with Ryan and Jake.
And Jake. Okay, interesting.
Because partially because of your low ranking of them from a few weeks ago, I thought it'd be kind of fun to make you go up against Ryan and Jake and let them maybe get a little revenge on you. They are, like I said, they have surprisingly made more playoff appearances than you think. I also like the idea of Gelch being in a division against his brother Ryan, which hasn't happened since 2014. I went back and looked at that. So for the first time in 4 years, Gelch and Ryan are in the same division. So hopefully that prevents, you know, some brotherly collusion there. And yeah, I just thought, okay, Ryan, Jake, Gelch, Chaz sounds like a solid division, which means
I thought you were going to put Johnny and Goop in our division intentionally, so that way the chances of multiple teams coming out of that division for the championship were lessened. You know, given how strong Johnny and Gelch typically are, and how depending on what year it is for me, I could be strong or not.
Well, Ryan and Jake have been pretty strong the last few years too. So I honestly didn't know. I did toy with putting Johnny in your division, but at the end of the day, I decided against it and I put Ryan and Jake in there because I enjoy the storylines a little more, and I enjoy the storylines of having Johnny and Coop Johnny and Goop also in the same division with Mike and Kat, and letting them. Letting them all kind of be in the same division together and battling it out. I feel like that's a pretty natural natural pairing of those rivals right there.
Yeah, I like it. I mean, I mean, obviously, I would say that based on what you're describing, these divisions as they exist have never existed before in this exact permutation. And it's been, in most cases, for some of the dual pairings, it's been a few years since these teams have been in the same division.
Yes.
So I like your reasoning. I think that you did a good job there. I think for me, I would have been solely like competitive based. Like who do I think is going to be the worst teams?
I mean, there was a little, but, so there
I appreciate you didn't go that way though. You didn't fully go that way. I mean, I get why you picked Tim and Joe, you know, they were stronger together, but we don't know what they're going to be when they're apart now. It's been so long. Do they remember how to run their own team completely on their own?
I think they'll be okay. I think I don't think it's going to require too much muscle memory to do that. So there was a little bit of gamesmanship in there, but I also thought at the end of the day, who the hell knows, you know, who's going to be good, who's going to be not. You know, I could probably say that Johnny is going to be good, but so I didn't want him in my division. But I didn't really care where else he went. I played it to the storylines a little bit. I wanted to keep it interesting because, like I said, you really don't know who's going to be good on an individual year. So we'll find out.
Yeah, I mean, I like the fact that we do this before we obviously pick our teams, right? Because then it would be really
unfair. Right, that would be really unfair. No, that was, yeah, we should never do that. So yeah, I hopefully people are okay with it.
Yeah, we'll see. Any hints at the division names? Do you have a general idea of what you're going with yet?
No, I still don't know what I'm going with for division names. Joe put it out on the chat because I did reveal what I'm thinking for the league name, which is the Glory Hole.
Jesus.
A couple meetings with that name. But I also want people to be able to access their leagues at work, so I might ditch that group name in favor of something else that's a little more a little more safe for work. Yeah.
Yep.
But yeah, maybe at the end of the day, I'll just stick with Glory Hole and say screw you, everybody. Who knows?
I don't have that problem. I work from home, so.
Yeah, and I'll be working from home and on the road a lot, so I'm not going to have that problem either. But the rest of you might. So too bad. But yeah, not official yet. Not official yet, but I'm leaning that way. Division names, I do not know what the division names will be yet. No idea.
All right. So I think that brings this episode to a close. We are shockingly under 30 minutes.
We are under time. Anything else you want to add here?
Jeez, I'm just, you know, I'm looking forward to the draft now that we have the draft date set. It's just, you know, there's 12 preseason games that are happening tomorrow. And, you know, I'm going to be preoccupied with my chat with Mike, so I won't even
so many preseason games for people to overreact to.
Yeah,
it's going to be great. It's going to be great.
But,
I will say I have gotten a little deeper into my preparation. I have started to identify guys I might want to target and guys I want to avoid, generally speaking. haven't delved down to the nitty gritty. I have been having fun with putting together this spreadsheet that I'm going to probably send out to the group tomorrow of, you know, recapping the last couple of drafts and seeing guys' actual value versus the ESPN projected value and just how often guys go for above or below that value and who they tend to be and when they tend to go in the draft. I think it's pretty fascinating to look at and maybe might inform some decisions from people.
Yeah, I would say so. I mean, if I had to wager a guess, my guess would be that there is definitely a trend that happens based on the number of players and where we are in the draft. So if I had to guess, and I'm sure we'll find out when we send it out, but my guess is that early on the draft, let's say the first 40 to 50 players, those players always go for slightly under value on the whole. And then as we start to ski towards everyone starting to fill up their teams, the players start to go for more than their value on the ESPN because we are a little bit more of a tempered league. That's my guess, is that we start to see it shift, you know, at the maybe 40 to 60 player mark, somewhere in there.
I would say generally you're correct there. The 40 to 60 mark, yeah, that's about right. It depends on the year there. I mean, last year there were some guys early that went for a little over value. You know, I'm just looking down the list now, but really guys start going for overvalue. Honestly, the biggest thing I noticed was it's the guys that are for like $3, $4, $5. They get bit up by, you know, in some cases almost double the value of what their projected value is. So $3 guys are going for $6 or $7 and $4 guys are going for $8, $9, you know, that right. kind of thing. That's where actually you see most of the overbids. It's not at the top or it's that kind of lower middle class of player that or the you know, trendy sleepers that multiple people are targeting and they get bit up a little bit.
Yeah. Yep. That always seems to happen.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But, and then, well, you know, we could talk more about that when I send it out.
Fair enough. Okay, great. All right. So I think we're at time. So we'll cut it there. Any final thoughts for the week? For you?
No, I'm all good.
Okay. All right, everybody. Well, thanks for tuning in, and we'll see you next week on the Chief and Chaz Power Half Hour.